Hello and welcome to VentureCast. I'm David Hornick from August Capital.
And this is Howard Hartenbaum from August Capital.
That's right. And it's just the two of us. Craig did the one transition show and then he left us.
But he did leave us some equipment with bad batteries in it.
Yes, so we started. We just had some genius material. Howard and I started recording VentureCast. We had some really awesome thoughts about important stuff. And then I looked down to make sure that the levels were appropriate, and there were no lights on the levels. Why is that? Because the batteries had gone out.
So all that good stuff we said, it's all gone now.
It's gone.
So now you have to listen to the bad stuff.
Yeah, right. So you might as well turn it off now. But the thing is, Howard, you said to me, oh, should we get new batteries? Like, I'll go get some new batteries. And what did I say to you?
You said, nah, these will be fine.
So, these are fine.
So the batteries that used to be in there,
IKEA.
Yeah.
Therein lies the problem.
Therein lies, like, you know, when I think batteries, I think like Duracell, king, the copper top, not IKEA.
IKEA alkaline.
Made in the People's Republic of China in 1862.
Yeah, it's hard for those precious metals.
They're very nice looking though, actually, aren't they? They look like rechargeable batteries.
I thought they were, but they're not. They're just crappy IKEA batteries.
Well.
Anyway, so sorry about that. Sorry that you missed out on all that good stuff. Now we just have to come up with, you know, mediocre stuff at best.
Now that we've run out of topics.
That's true. So we should start out. We're going to start out that we have made a pledge. We have pledged because the last show, the return of VentureCast, we felt that we had used the word Twitter a few too many times.
And now in this show, we've used it once and that's it.
We're done. We're going to hold ourselves to that. If we say it again, we're going to abruptly end the show.
So if I want to end the show, that's all I've got to do.
Yeah, you have the secret word.
Like, instead of saying I've got to go to the bathroom, I just say that word.
So, you know what? I was just having a conversation with some folks. I was in a meeting with a couple of executives from one of my companies. And we were discussing something important, and it was very exciting. We were having this good conversation. And one of the execs said, excuse me, I really have to go to the bathroom. I'll be right back. And went to the bathroom and peed. And this started this interesting conversation of people in the meeting. Instances where they had to go to the bathroom and whether it was appropriate to interrupt a meeting or whatever. And so I was telling this story of the fact that relatively recently I was being pitched and I had drunk too much water over the course of the day. And like, you know, 20 minutes in, I really had to go to the bathroom. And so I did one of these, pull out your phone and pretend it's ringing and say, oh, I'm so sorry. You know, it's family issue. Excuse me 2 seconds. And I went out and I went to pee. And when I came out from the bathroom, one of the entrepreneurs had come out of the conference room to take a phone call. And he sees me coming out of the bathroom. So I was totally nailed that I've been full of it.
Yeah, but you're always full of it. I guess the bigger question...
That's your answer?
No. The bigger thing is, why is it ever wrong to say, hello, excuse me, but I have to pee? It's like, it's just, why is that not socially acceptable?
It should be, except that, don't you think it's an indication of bad time management? Like, why hadn't I peed before the meeting?
Because you didn't have to go.
Well, is my body processing, you know, water that quickly that, boom, done.
I was sitting on a plane at the end of the runway once, and we were sitting there, and finally the captain said, will the gentleman who's in the bathroom please get back in your seat? We can't take off. And I was thinking to myself, God, when you've got to go, you've got to go.
Actually, I don't know. I don't know how the VentureCast has become the show discussing peeing, but for those of you who watch The Amazing Race, one of my favorite TV shows, the way they edited the last show of this season suggested that the team that lost, the Amazing Race, lost because the woman, I guess it was the second to last race, because one of the women had to pee so badly because she had to eat all these weird foods out on the streets in China, and she drank so much water with it in the course of this that she had to stop and pee, and that was the difference between winning and losing. So, Howard, it can make or break you. It can make and break your company.
I hereby rename this to Venture P.
No, we can't have it.
Anyway, moving on.
What's our best topic? We need to redeem ourselves with like our most technical topic. What do we got, Howard? Anything good? Either venture capital-ish or technical-ish?
Well, this topic that keeps going around on the venture side, you know, when venture guys get together like for a lunch, we're basically wasting our time because what we'd rather do is spend the time with entrepreneurs.
Yeah, we should. Right.
If we have a lunch where somehow we've had poor time management, that instead of meeting with entrepreneurs, we're meeting with other VCs. sometimes we get in this discussion, is it team, is it idea, or is it market, or is it company? And it's kind of a interesting topic.
Yeah, no, I've just had this. So Mike Jung, a buddy of ours from Panorama Capital, this is his question.
He used to be
the
on
moment.
The same floor as I did up in the city.
Oh, he did?
In 50 California.
I don't know what that was. I believe I better turn off the sound on my computer. So that was when Panorama was called something else, right?
Yeah. They were up in the city, and he's a good guy. And now that David's turned off, so his computer stopped singing music to him. I thought it was like the building saying, "We're about to do a fire drill.
Please step out." That would end it. That'd be the end of VentureCast. And only, you know, 5 minutes in or something.
No, the end of our second VentureCast for the day.
Ah, exactly.
Anyway, back to Mike Jung.
Yeah, so anyway, yeah, I've just had this conversation where Mike Jung, on a couple of occasions, said to a group of, as you say, VCs sitting around examining their navels, "So what are you? Are you a people investor? Are you an idea investor? Or are you a business investor? So what is it, Howard? Which are you?"
So I have this, before I answer that question, I'll answer the question that I want to answer.
Okay, sorry. My bad.
Which is very related to this, which is, you know, I tried to make a list of, you know, what are the 100 top things you look for when you're making an investment? And, you know, you write down teams and background and track record and experience and write down growing market, and you write down defensible technology and IP and know-how, and you go down and down and down. You know, a company already has customers, the technology works, the demo is good, and you go further and further down the list. And then you take that list to any pitch that you have where you funded the company, and you say to yourself, "Wow, I only answered 8.
You mean I only got check marks. Yes
to 8 out of the 100. And so that's basically our job, is to try and make sure the company has at least 8. And usually, in my opinion, team is the most important part.
So you're a team investor.
I am, because I think really great people can make gold out of shit, and really bad people can make shit out of gold. And so I would go for the team.
All right. And I mean, curiously, we agree.
Imagine that.
I totally agree. So my view is, like, how often do you invest in a company and then it's successful 8 years down the road, and what they do 8 years from now is what they pitched you on? Here's what we're going to do, and here's our plan, and then they actually do those sets of things, and it works, and it makes a bunch of money.
With absolutely no change to the business plan, I would say the probability is less than 5%.
Yeah, it's like it approaches zero.
Yeah.
And so,
at 8 years, companies usually don't exist anymore.
Well, that's a whole other question. But these, I said, successful. Like,
well, somebody's bought them and then killed them.
All right, that's possible.
It's a whole other problem.
So if that's the case, if these companies change, you know, necessarily change, then betting on the idea, or more importantly, the business, that's sort of silly, right? It's like, I'm going to bet on something that I'm 95% sure will not exist by the time this company matters one way or the other. So I'm with you. So I agree, we should, it's definitely...
Now, there are occasions where you see this really wonderful team, and they come to you with an idea that just doesn't make sense to you. And the question you usually say back to them is, "What other ideas do you have? Because you guys are great, but that idea seems odd to me." And sometimes they say, "No, you just don't get it," and they're right. And sometimes they say, "Well, we have another idea, and that's actually a better idea," and they pursue that. So in the end, it is team, but the team has to make the decision which path to follow. And I'm a firm believer that sometimes some companies get into trouble because they misperceive that the investors have given them money because they love their idea. And they pursue an idea which may, they're a great team, but they pursue not the perfect idea, and they don't deviate from it because they think that it's been validated by investment. And we have to be careful with entrepreneurs that if they see other things, they shouldn't hesitate to say, "Well, we want to turn the direction of the company. We want to try something different." Because if something's not working, spending money on it and spending your time on it just because you raised the money for that would be a waste of time.
No, the truth is that everything we're investing in gets better with iteration, right? So if you're not iterating, if you're not A/B testing everything you're doing, then you're missing out on something. And you may be a genius, and you may have just nailed it in the first instance. But even in that instance, you don't know it until you've tested a bunch of other things and go, "Yeah, I was right." So I'm with you. I mean, you know, look at it. We invested in VideoAgg when VideoAgg was this service to allow third parties to upload videos to things like social networks and dating sites and those sorts of things. Really great technology to allow you to do the upload and edit and that sort of thing. But over time, it became quite clear that the real value wasn't in that upload process and management process. The real value was in figuring out how to monetize those experiences. And the team got a lot of great, you know, great information about how to monetize in the context of their earlier business, but they shifted models to become this rich media ad network where they could then say, okay, we know how to use video as an enticement to look at an ad, and we know how to create these rich media experiences, but they don't have to live in our own videos. They can live in someone else's video, or they can live on a web page, or they can live in an IM chat or whatever. And that's proved to be a great turn. They've moved the business into what is a fantastic business and growing. And so if they had continued down the path, YouTube would have won a bunch of video. The big companies would have had their own video upload, and we would have been a relatively unprofitable and eventually dying company. So I'm glad that I bet on smart people in that instance to figure out, hey, this isn't the thing that's the biggest value to us, and let's go build that.
Oftentimes we meet entrepreneurs and they present some idea, and after they walk out, we talk about the team, we talk about the ideas, and there's been many cases where we funded teams where we didn't particularly, where we weren't convinced that the idea had all the legs it needed. But I can't think of any case where we funded a team that we didn't like the team and it was the greatest idea we ever heard.
Yeah, I can't think of
except I'm sure there's some that have been very successful regardless, but luckily,
we didn't say no to them because we would have
if we only had the chance.
That would have been a shame. But well, I'm reminded of a conversation I had. So when I was an attorney back in my attorney days, I represented this great company called When.com. It was the first online calendar company. And the company was built.
And if you're shopping for a house, Joe Beninato, who is a co-founder, his house is up for sale.
Thank you.
It's on Springer. It's a beautiful house. So if you want a really nice house from somebody who founded When.com, you can buy Joe's house.
You can have some part of that history. I didn't know that we were going to become a real estate, pimping real estate section.
No, I like Joe, and if he's trying to sell his house, he just put it on the market 2 weeks ago, maybe somebody will take a look.
All right, it's in Los Altos.
102 North Springer.
And so Joe's another MIT guy, right?
He was. He's a year behind me in MIT.
So you are fellow MIT geeks. That's very nice.
I have a good story about Joe.
Okay, good. Let's hear it.
I remember once Joe locked his keys in his car with the engine still running.
But did he come up with some ingenious way to fix
his problem? I remember. That's the only part I remember.
That's the story? This is the good story you have about Joe.
It's
that he locked his keys in the car with it still running.
How do you do that?
That's a good question. That's been an old car. Because the old cars, you actually could lock it and then close it.
Yeah, I didn't have one of those key fobs. It was a long time ago.
But
I'm sure that was embarrassing.
We don't mean to diminish Joe. Joe's a great entrepreneur.
He's great.
He's gone on to form a number of companies. Presto is the most recent, which is this sort of fax and email service that allows you to sort of message with your elderly family members, etc. But the guys who I was going to talk about are some of his co-founders. A guy named
Ted Barnett.
That's who I was going to talk about. Tony Espinosa and Ted Barnett.
Who I'm an investor in their company.
Oh, so this is what I want to get at. Ted and Tony were looking at coming up with some new interesting thing to do.
Supersecret.com.
Wait, I'll get there, Howard.
I got to promote him.
I'm going to let you promote him.
Wait a second. This is the David Hornick Show. I will now shut up.
You know, but look, there's a certain cadence to my story here, and you're just messing with it. Are you done? I'll let you do your thing.
No, please, go ahead.
All right. So Tony and Ted come in to pitch their business. And at the time, they were thinking a bunch of different ideas. And one of them was this thinking about something in the health information space. And they came in and they pitched us on this idea. And I was like, well, I don't know about the idea, but I'm a big fan of the team. And I sort of talked about how much I thought the world of these guys. But we never ended up investing any money. And they sort of rethought whether it was the right idea. Well, in the course of rethinking whether it was the right idea, they turned to us to an incredibly different idea, which is this idea of social networked games for the preteens, and they created a company called Super Secret. The only problem is they didn't come back and tell me about Super Secret so I could say, oh, I like that idea and I like the team and let's put some money in. because apparently Howard, you put money in. So was it the seed round, or did they just do one round? What happened?
No, it was they had some angels, and when I was at Draper Richards before, we participated in that financing. And the only problem with the company was it used to be called Jam Jam World.
Ah,
Jam World. But then they came up with Super Secret. That's a more interesting name.
And it's still Super Secret. So now they're in...
I think they couldn't get Jam Jam as a domain name, so they had to change their name.
That's good.
But Super Secret's a better name.
I always thought Super Secret was like their stealth name, and that when they came out of stealth, they would call it something else.
Stuck.
People just liked it.
It's a great name.
Which is good. It is a great name, and, you know, it's basically spellable, and it's a little long, but, you know, all the short names are gone. You can't have a short name to a company now without buying it, which is sort of ridiculous.
Sony. That's a short name.
Well, they own Sony.com. I'm just saying. But you can't even make up. You can't even make up a fictitious name like Schnitt, which would be hard to spell, but at least you could arguably buy it. But I think that every four-letter combination is gone.
The last four letters of your name are Rnick.
No, wait a second. Yeah.
Well, you know how names sometimes people like to drop letters out of words. Why don't you just drop the first two letters so you don't have any clue what the word actually is?
Rnick. I think Hornick, before we got to Ellis Island, was probably something longer, like Hornikovich or Horniki or whatever. But so, believe it or not, Hornick is the short version. I feel good, you know, James Horn, who's also in the venture business, he got the better truncation. He just became Horn. We stayed Hornick.
Could be worse.
I don't know. What is Hartenbaum? What do you think is worse, Hornick or Hartenbaum?
I don't know. Hartenbaum's a long name.
But at least it has something to do with a tree. What's Harten?
It could be hard or heart. I don't really know.
Hard tree or heart tree?
Even though, actually, I go to Germany now quarterly for a board meeting, and maybe I'll ask some of those guys who actually speak German.
Yeah, exactly. Now that you've invested in a company in Munich. What are you doing investing in a company in Munich?
I like beer.
That's the answer.
Oh, wait. Good team.
Good. Oh, yes, exactly. Well, hey, now this is an interesting thing, right? I mean, we loved Swoopo, but it was an incredibly interesting business.
But it was far away.
But it was far away, and there's no way we would have funded it if we didn't like the team. So even though I think in this instance it sort of, you know, it was an interesting business, until we had time to spend time with the team, and in fact, you flew out and spent time, you and one of our partners flew to Germany to spend time with the team, not because there was a particular thing we needed to know, but just to get a sense of what the team was like and whether we liked them. And presumably you guys came back thinking that they were okay.
I would say better than okay.
Oh, good. That's a relief. I heard a funny story, by the way, Howard. So he's looking at me like,
what's going to happen to me now?
What is this story? No.
I didn't mean to pick on Joe Beninato before. He's really a great guy.
No, Joe's a great entrepreneur. No one was picking on him just because he locked his keys in his car. Well, you know.
With the engine running.
Well, he's kind of a dumbass. But but in that one instance, you weren't saying that implied that was true of everything Joe does.
No. I'm just saying every now and then when I think of Joe, I just remember that happened. And I think it's kind of an awkward situation to happen.
So I got to tell you, we had a babysitter. We had a babysitter who, it was probably a good indication that she shouldn't be our babysitter anymore when she came with her own child to our house and locked her child and keys in the car. And I was like, okay, this is not good. It was not a burning hot day.
Did you hire her?
No, she already was my babysitter. That's what I'm saying. Like, this, you know, things have gone poorly when this is the experience that come, you know.
So I interrupted you. You had a story for me.
Oh, I don't remember. Oh, yes. So I was at this great dinner. So Tim O'Reilly and John Battelle have this dinner, this kind of pre-Web 2.0 conference dinner. We gather a bunch of people and talk about what's coming up for the conference in the fall. And then, you know, if people have thoughts about other great speakers, etc. And they have an incredible lineup. So now I'm going to pitch. I'll pitch the Web 2.0 conference, which I've always enjoyed. But they have a great lineup of people who are either directly involved in the consumer web business, but also, you know, folks like Immelt and others who are, you know, clearly relevant to how we think about the web and or maybe it's not the web. Yeah, it's this connected world business. Anyway, while I was there, I was chatting about Swoopo, and I was chatting with someone, and Mike Marquez was there, whatever. But I started talking with this guy, Sam Pallara, and Sam Pallara is the chief technologist at Yahoo. Great guy, smart guy, and we were talking about various things, and somehow we started talking about Swoopo. And Sam said, oh, I love Swoopo. I was obsessed with Swoopo for a period of time because you see so few businesses that have a new business model that's different and interesting. So he said, for a while there, I was telling everybody about it. Oh, Swoopo this, Swoopo that. And I said, oh, that's really interesting. And I said, well, you know, the way that Howard heard about it was through a similar conversation with Mike Marquez. And Sam said, well, I told Marquez about it. He said, I was the one who told Marquez, like, you got to check out this business. So now you know, like, we owe Sam Pallara at least a breakfast. And it would be, as you know, it would be more useful than us sitting around talking with other VCs. You could actually talk with someone who builds cool stuff. And so I thought that was interesting. I would like to meet him. Oh, you don't know him?
No.
All right. Well, you should meet him. He's a good guy.
Wow. VentureCast is useful.
Exactly.
I can meet people.
Well, I'll be sure to make that intro for you, Howard.
Yeah. So another thing we were talking about recently was syndication or co-investing with other companies. And you just did StumbleUpon.
Yep.
And co-invested alongside with Accel.
Yep.
And you're in the process of another investment right now where you're, Ojai was a co-investment with somebody else.
Yep. And
you're in the process of another investment right now where you're working with another venture firm. And I just thought people might want to hear about syndication versus non-syndication.
Yeah. I mean, look, I think our view, and we're often asked this by entrepreneurs, right? They come in and then they're talking about the deal and they say, so how do you guys feel about syndicating? And usually that question is asked because they prefer it. Right there. Oh, I'd love to get a couple firms in. But there are some firms, there's some notorious firms that have, as we say in the business, sharp elbows. And they really, once they like a deal, you know, you could forget it. You're not gonna share the deal. I mean, I had two instances with one of these notorious firms where I said, let's just share the financing. We'll split it and we'll whatever. And in both instances, they said no. And in one of those instances, the entrepreneur said, well, fine, then August should just do the whole thing. In another instance, they said, well, all right, fine, you guys can do the whole thing. But I do believe it's suboptimal, right? I mean, I just think that at the end of the day, if you can have more smart people with, you know, more resources and connections and big funds sitting behind them, that as a general matter is pretty useful to the company. And I'm sure you've seen this. I mean, I'm sure you've seen instances where it's helpful, right? Where, because you guys invested early when you were Draper Richards, and
always looked for syndication partners if we could find them. And the reality is, as optimistic as we all are with every new investment, not all of them go smoothly right from the start. And if things aren't going completely smoothly, you're better off to have more people helping out, bigger networks, more money. When it's time for financing, everybody holds hands and works on it together. When there's one guy and you just have one investor and the market is tough and things aren't coming along, sometimes it's a little bit harder to get them to keep moving you forward.
Well, so, and we're seeing, you know, when the economy gets tough and it's tough to raise new money and the companies, we saw a lot of inside rounds the past quarter. I think we'll see a lot through this entire year.
And the more funds around the table you have, the easier it is to do an inside round because each firm doesn't have to put in nearly as much money. And if you have only one investor and you need to do an inside round, there's a chance that investor may say, you know, it's just too much money for us. Or if you have to do it twice,
right,
then it's too much money. So I'm a big proponent of doing syndication. I mean, you do have to deal with two VCs.
Yeah, right. Yeah, exactly. That is the downside. The downside is now you have two VCs. And, you know, frankly, the fact that I have to be in the room with you is daunting enough.
Yeah, likewise.
Yeah, so, I mean, I don't know. It's all right. So it's not without its challenges. But I agree. I mean, imagine the case where a company needs to do an inside round and to get to cash flow positive or whatever, it'll take $6 or $8 million, which is not a huge amount of money. But if you're the only firm sitting there, right?
And you already put $6 million in.
So you say, okay, I'm going to put $8 more million in. That's pretty challenging. But imagine you're raising $8 million and there are three firms that have been invested so far. And so everybody's putting in a little over $2.5 million to get the company to where it needs to go. That's a much easier check to write. It's a much and you have the comfort of a bunch of other people going, yeah, let's, you know, we believe in this business, let's drive it forward. It can, as they say, it can be awfully lonely when you're writing the check alone, because you know, it's a question.
Is that like it's lonely to go on a date all by yourself?
Well, that's very... I wouldn't know, Howard, do you? I mean, you went to MIT, so...
One
is the loneliest number. See, I do have to sing every now and again.
You sang the Love Boat last year. I like that.
And if you're nice, I might sing it again. Just not this time.
Not today.
The other thing about syndication that I saw this in 2000, so let's say 2000 to 2004, is that when it's a tough time and people aren't really interested in putting money to work, it's hard to find syndication partners, right? There are a relatively small number of investors who are actively investing right now. And so you have to find the right set of people. And there's some deals where there's lots of energy and excitement and things get done. But oftentimes at August, we see a deal that we love. We understand, you know, hey, this is an exciting deal. And we get introduce it to a bunch of our friends in the venture business. And they say, well, that might be interesting, but it's hugely risky or whatever. And then we have to decide, all right, we're going to go it alone or not. And, you know, in those instances where we are excited and we say we'll give you a term sheet and we'll find a syndicate partner. If we don't, then we'll fund them. But it's just an interesting time.
That's an important point, which is generally, if we like the business, we're happy to do it without a syndicate partner. But we think it's a benefit if we can find a right partner and the entrepreneurs like that partner as well. But if we don't and we like the business enough to do it with a syndicate partner, we generally like it to do it by ourselves.
Yeah.
There are sometimes some firms will say we'll only do it with a syndicate partner, and that may just be because the company needs $15 million and their fund isn't large enough to do that whole deal themselves.
But it's challenging, right? I mean, I think we do have to look at how much money it takes to build a company, but I think you have to be focused on, okay, is this an interesting opportunity? Is it an interesting team? Do we feel like there's something to be done here? And I think we've from 2000 to 2004, we invested in a bunch of interesting companies that I think will prove to be really successful in the long run, where we were the lonely investors, right? I remember funding, my very first venture investment was in a company called PayCycle, this small business payroll company. And they talked to lots of people, but, you know, I just believed that this was an interesting business and a great team. And we had to put in a bunch of money, I forget, $6 or $8 million in the first instance, because there wasn't another partner out there. And yet now it's a big business and there are lots of people doing payroll on the service. And, you know, so there are... Sometimes you just have to step up to ideas that you think are worth funding.
Yes, you do.
There you go. There you go.
Am I being agreeable enough for you today?
You are. You're very agreeable, Howard. All right, what else have we got? What else have we...
So we saw on the news about the new Palm Pre coming out.
Oh, yes.
And...
What do you carry? What's your phone?
I carry a second generation iPhone 3G.
You got the iPhone 3G.
And
did you wait until it was 3G or did you have the first generation?
I waited.
So waited.
I am generally not an early adopter type of person. If a new car comes out, I wait till the second model year because I want them to work the bugs out of it.
So you're not buying a Tesla. I mean, talk about the double whammy. It's the first generation and it's an electric car that has all sorts of other interesting challenges.
I saw one on the road yesterday, very quiet when it drove by me.
Yeah.
I was walking my dog.
Over.
Yeah. I'm walking my dog all of a sudden. Like, cool.
It's dangerous. I mean, I actually think they have to start thinking about how. I think you should have like ringtones for your car where your car makes noise, that the noise of your choosing.
It has a little radar, and anytime you get near a person that's moving, it makes a little singing sound or a ticking sound.
Or whatever. No. They're cool. Right. And they have the sedan is now in the showroom on El Camino.
I drove by, but I assume it's not. Is it just a clay model or is it a real
No,
car?
It's a real car. Hmm. Well, I don't know. I haven't been in. My son Noah is a car fanatic now, so he keeps wanting me to go in. But he said, "Oh, it's too big. I can't believe how big it is." Said, no, it's a sedan. What did you think it was going to be? I said, "Think the problem is the perspective of it being surrounded by a bunch of little roadsters."
Well, now that Mercedes has given them some money, maybe I'll give them my deposit on the sedan.
I was thinking
it's
about
a $5,000 deposit.
$5,000, yeah.
But I really don't want one of the first 100 cars.
Well, you're in luck because I think they have 500 deposits already.
I want to make sure
that
they've gotten some of the bugs.
You'll get like a 500 in second.
Yeah. But anyway, back to the Palm Pre versus Apple. So
yeah.
Not being an early adopter, but I used to be an ergonomics engineer for Honda in the car business.
Cool.
And I like...
So what did you do? What does that involve exactly?
It was the greatest job on the planet Earth.
What are you doing here?
This is the second greatest job. So this...
Okay.
I was like 23, 24 years old, and I wore a white jumpsuit that had no pockets, so you couldn't stand around with your hands in your pockets. And my job was
And was that the reason there were no pockets?
Yep. So you couldn't stand around with your hands in your pockets so that you would work. And that had back pockets, so it was funny. We had a meeting. Everybody would stand around with their hands in their back pocket. So I wore this white jumpsuit. And my job was to test drive prototype cars.
You're kidding me.
That was my job, and I lived in Japan for 2 years at Honda's research and development facility. And I worked on the NSX team and on the Civic Coupe team. And these are both cars that had not been seen on any streets. They were hand-built. They were prototype cars. And I was on the team where we had to do ride noise. We had to do seat comfort. We had to do wind noise, windshield wiper choppiness, getting in and out of the car. If the car is muddy, do you get any mud on your clothes? How do the windows seal? You know, how do the switches interfere with your knees? All these types of stuff. And so my job was to basically take an NSX out on a test track where there were no place and drive it. And I drove that car 160 miles an hour. We went and we got all, we rented or bought the competitive cars, Porsches and Ferraris, and we took them out on the test track and we drove around. And we were young and it was fun. That was my job. So like my friends were like, they were like behind computers like typing, and I got to go to Suzuka Circuit for 1 week driving course on the racetrack. So the theory was if you had to have a lot of experience driving, so if you had a problem in one of the prototype cars, which cost a couple $1 million to build by hand, you don't crash
it. You could recover.
Because if you crash a prototype car, you put the whole process back for about 6 months. And that was my job.
That's awesome. That's better than my first job, which was, of course, being a litigator.
You were squishing bugs, and I was squishing them on the windshield.
Yeah, no, I would crush you like a bug if you paid me a lot of money for my sleepless nights.
So the Apple iPhone is, to me, a Honda. It is a beautifully designed product. It is easy to use. It is intuitive. It is a generation forward. I just love it, and as much as I used to be a BlackBerry and Windows computer user, I now have an iMac on my desk and I have an iPhone, and I think there is zero chance I will buy a Palm.
You just sounded like the biggest Apple fanboy ever.
Fanboy I am. So there's not many things I like.
You were able to get rid of a keyboard and not have a problem with that. How often do you email anyone from your phone?
So I found the BlackBerry, I email every day, probably 20, 30 times using my iPhone. I just make the email shorter. Because it isn't as convenient to type, but I just make them 8-word emails or 12-word emails instead of it used to be 50-word emails.
So you view this as an efficiency device. It's basically forced you to be more efficient.
It's great.
What about when you're driving 90 miles an hour or whatever you're driving?
I can type with my thumb.
Can you type while you're driving?
With my thumb.
While looking at the road, or do you have to look at your...
It's actually easier on the iPhone because you can type with your thumb, and on the BlackBerry I was used to using two thumbs.
You can't. So I have, in one pocket I have an iPhone, so I don't mean to rip on the iPhone. I like the iPhone as a media device, but in my other pocket I have a Trio. Which, you know, I view the Trio, BlackBerry, whatever, you know, something with a keyboard. And so I do think it's an interesting question. Like,
I only want one device. It's simpler.
So do I. I would love to have just one device. It's just that I can't type on the iPhone. I think
Let me see the shape of your thumb.
Let me see your thumb. Your thumb's bigger than my thumb.
Mine's got a point on the end.
Oh, well, there you go. You've got a built-in pointer. I'm looking forward to seeing the Pre. I don't see myself buying it necessarily, but it has the capacity to solve the problem by having a keyboard but being a good media device, which is not... But, it, you know, on the other hand, the new iPhone comes out soon. I don't think it'll have a keyboard, but, you know, Mr. I don't like first generation, you're going to wait, or are you going to buy the new iPhone?
I'll probably wait 6 months.
6 months? You're a patient man.
Yeah, but the one I have already works.
I know, but it won't be nearly as cool as the new one that I'm going to stand online to get, and I could buy you one while I'm there.
If you pay for it, I'll take it.
No, you'll pay for it, but I'm just saying.
I mean, I like seeing new stuff that's coming out, and there's a lot of excitement around the Palm Pre coming out. I just, being an Apple user, and I have completely switched over, I'm dedicated.
I don't know if you can hear this, but we've got, like, We got Mr. Weed Whacker sitting outside the office. So now you got our droning on plus. It's pretty annoying, frankly. I hope you can't hear it. Maybe only I can hear it. It's unbelievable, actually, how much you have to worry about the acoustics when you're sitting. Like today, Howard and I are sitting next to each other on a couch, not uncomfortably close.
It's not a love seat.
No, it's a couch, and we have a cushion between us. But last time, I was sitting in a chair across from Howard, and I bought this omnidirectional mic so we could sit wherever. The only problem with sitting that way is that I was facing these big panes of glass, and the acoustics were bad because what happened is the reflections of sound right off the glass were sort of monumentally bright. And so this time we'll see whether it works. It may be just that my voice is so freaking nasally and whiny that there's nothing that we can't help it. Howard's got that. You have like the perfect radio voice. You should go into radio.
I should go into radio.
See, listen to that. Oh, you got that deep voice. Yeah, but you're like who's the singer? Oh, come on. You got the one who... Never mind. I'm not going
to
get
that. I don't listen to the radio. I don't watch TV.
What do you do?
Play with my iPhone.
That's it.
I downloaded 1 billion applications already.
So you had talked about how your daughter was a big fan of Pocket God.
Yeah.
Right? So I downloaded Pocket God. I don't get it. Have you played Pocket God?
I have. It's
what
great.
Do you do?
I'll show you later.
I need to know because I was like... I can
like,
make them levitate. I can make the native.
So kids really like discovery, I think. They like, my daughter is 14, and you give her a game with no instructions, and it's not even clear what the goal is, and she will figure things out like, oh, I made it into a tornado, or I was able to throw guys into the volcano and it erupted. How do you come up with these ideas?
So that's what Pocket God is like. You can, because I did discover you could throw them or they go in with the
sharks.
I'll
show you some of the tricks.
Whatever.
The whole thing is there's always some other feature in there that you haven't
that you
figured
figure
out. And the kids like to figure out what the next feature is. So you spent money on it. So how do you think about spending money on applications?
Did Pocket God cost me anything?
I think that one cost you $5.
Seriously? Well, then
it might have been $1.
They owe you a commission because the only reason I bought it was because you'd said that your daughter loved Pocket God. And yeah. I was like, oh, I got to check it out. So I actually had this. So this is like classic Hornick child, you know, like me being ripped off. My son loses it to my 11-year-old loses one of his molars or something. Now, the idea of the tooth fairy has been long ago debunked in the Hornick household, but they still like the idea that there's a revenue opportunity with lost teeth. And so my son says to me, I lost a tooth. We can skip the tooth fairy masquerade, but... can I get some apps for my iPhone? This is like a negotiation.
So there's an opportunity. It would be a free app called, or maybe it's an iPhone gift card called the Tooth Fairy.
Tooth Fairy gift card. Seriously, my kids would be into it. So my son bought this fishing game. Have you seen the fishing game? It's kind of cool. You cast, and then you have to reel in the fish, and the light.
There was
ones
a physical device in Japan just for that. That was a huge.
Oh, I remember that
early.
They used to sell it here as well. It was this, and it had a little teeny screen, and then you'd pretend to fish. It was cool.
I lived in Japan, and I would see guys like on the train, and they'd be rolling and reeling in the reel, and they'd be snapping it. And I'm like, if you hit somebody in the head with that, it's going to be a problem. But it was, you know, they're very fatty over there. Fatty, F-A-D-D-Y,
fatty, yes,
with the D.
Speaking of Fatif, F-A-T-T-Y, I don't know if you're a fan. You lived there for a while, but I'm a big sumo fan. My brother also
lived
there.
That's not fat, it's muscle.
Well, so my brother was lived over there. He worked in an artificial intelligence lab or whatever, and he became a sumo fan, and of course then he infected me with this sumo. And we're in the midst of a sumo tournament right now. I think we're probably about 10 matches in. And I was complaining to my brother that the sumo guys are not as fat as they used to be. They used to be huge. And now they don't seem to see... they seem to be much taller. Like, you have these guys, particularly from Eastern Europe, who are really tall and kind of lanky. And I just think that's disappointing. But then the next week... the next match after I left this comment, then Josh put up a video of one of the biggest wrestlers. The guy was just monstrous. So just to say, they're still plenty fatty. Don't get sad about the sport. It hasn't gone to the skinny guys.
Yeah, culturally, it's interesting how you know, in a country that's an island that's very isolated, like Japan, where you can have a whole sport based on people who have grown up in that society, and there comes some tipping point where they start bringing people from other societies who have different physical, you know, different genes, different physical makeups, how it really changes the sport. And there's a big, you know, discussion going on there. Is it still the same sport?
I agree. I don't like it. I don't like it. I don't like it. I mean, remember...
You just like fatty Japanese men.
Well, I just assume it's a great sport, but and sometimes you have these little guys who are just awesome. They're fast and they're strong and they do well. But you remember this guy, this Hawaiian wrestler from you know...
Akebono.
Yeah. And he was just monstrous.
Huge.
He was just like a freak of nature monstrous, but he had no skills. And he had no respect for the culture and no respect for the history of the thing. And he, you know, and that
but
was
you
the
wouldn't
beginning.
Say that to his face.
That was the beginning. No, well, I would be looking at his penis. I wouldn't be looking at his face. The guy's huge. Maybe his stomach. And it would be covered. That's just, I mean, you know, that was a bad image, I'll admit.
Yeah, thank you very much.
I don't know how we got off on sumo wrestling. But anyway, so iPhone and the Japanese culture and fatty versus fatty. But anyway, so I don't know if I'll get a Palm Prix, but I do know. So this is the thing, right? This is the problem for Palm to a certain extent, right? They've come up with a revolutionary new phone that they're going to introduce, that lots of buzz, etc. And I have a Trio sitting in my pocket, and I'm not certain that I will get the Palm Prix, but I am certain that when the new iPhone comes out, that I'll buy it. That's pretty telling, right?
That tells me to buy Apple stock.
Well, we are not a stock recommendation site, are we, Howard?
I'm not recommending anybody else. I just want to buy it myself.
All right. Well, you can do what you have. So now, that reminds me.
IPO market.
IPOs. Howard, we have IPOs. Can you believe this? This is very exciting.
Without IPOs, it's a sad world for us.
Yeah, venture business is in big trouble without IPOs. Why don't you... If you will elucidate, you know, for those who don't appreciate that, why it is that IPOs are somehow meaningful to our business. I think we've said it before, but
well,
just for the sake of it,
there's different reasons for it. The reason that I like is that an IPO gives a company the chance to survive on its own and to set up its own destiny and be a long-term freestanding company like a Sony or a Google or an eBay. I mean, there's many companies that go public and become independent and grow, and they do change their model over time. When a company gets acquired, in many cases, the acquisition is the beginning of the end for that company.
Yep, that's true.
And a company gets acquired, and the management of the acquirer, you know, doesn't care as much about the business. They don't see the same vision. Sometimes the team members, founders, and managers leave. And the business cannot do so great over time, and 8 years later they shut it down quietly. And
which
is kind of sad. People make money, and that's all. When.com, they made money. They were acquired by AOL for hundreds of millions of dollars, and a few years later AOL just shut them off.
Yeah, no, I mean it is amazing.
A calendar from
so this is great.
Stuff.
I mean, you know, I wasn't thinking about this, but I think it's totally of an important point, which is if. Great entrepreneurs want to build long-term self-sustaining businesses that can grow and become meaningful, and so that I think that that's a huge motivation. And the fact that without the IPO market, it's incredibly hard to do that. It's very hard to be a self-sustaining private company over a long period of time. You know, we're seeing this now with Facebook, where they're allegedly have raised $150 million to allow employees to cash out. And it's because employees are getting impatient about when is this going to be a public company and we can make money. And, you know, Zuckerberg just said it to the press, we're a few years away from being a public company. So he's sort of taking the Google, we'll take our own sweet time, but we'll figure out how to make sure that people can be liquid in the meantime. But, you know, the reality is public companies have the capacity to be long-term, big businesses that grow, you know, that continue to grow value well after the quote-unquote liquidity event. And, you know, I've often talked about the fact that if you look at the companies in which August has invested, that the partners in August have invested, that if you had held every one of those stocks when they were distributed, you made a lot more money than if you had immediately sold, right? And in the late 90s, we had this problem where there were lots of companies getting public, but the first thing a venture investor did was sell, right? Oh, good, we're liquid. Whereas if you look at Microsoft, Sun, Intuit, Symantec, Seagate, etc., if you sold right away, you lost a huge amount of the value because companies got big, powerful, big market caps, etc.
To use Google as an example, there were many people along the way who tried to buy Google who were interested in buying it. And I've heard different stories, and I don't know which are true and which are not, but the one I'll raise about is eBay trying to buy Google for $6 billion and Google saying, no, $8 billion is the price. I don't know if this is true or not.
Yep.
It's some rumor somebody said.
We just have rumors here.
There is no argument that Google not selling was the greatest thing, because they are a long-term freestanding business worth a hell of a lot more than $6 or $8 billion, and it was good for the founders, it was good for the shareholders, it's good for the market, it's good for everybody involved in the mix. When you sell your company, to an acquirer, when your company is doing well, yes, you can make money, but yes, you just capped your upside.
That's Look, there are plenty of instances where it makes perfect sense to sell a company. We're not saying that there are oftentimes good fits for the management. There are good opportunities to sell and get liquid, etc. But I agree that if there's no alternative, if there's no capacity to be public, then you just wait for the right guys to buy you and move on. And so this week alone, we have two tech IPOs which I think is pretty exciting. We have OpenTable, which is supposed to sell today, I think. They priced the IPO. They had an original range for the shares. They actually increased the price at which they intended to sell the shares because there was sufficient demand. And then there's this company, SolarWinds, which is another great story of, so OpenTable is your classic venture-backed company, right? You guys, did Draper Richards seed fund OpenTable, or what's the...
Yeah, I think in the first round, Bill Draper, before I was there, Bill Draper put some money in. And the company went through some tough times and had some recap rounds, and in the end, the company goes public, and he'll still make money, but not nearly as much as he would have if he'd done all the recap rounds.
Right, well,
And luckily, he had syndication partners who were able to put the money in.
So Benchmark, did invest and continue to believe in the company and pushed forward. And I don't know what they own in the company.
25%, I think.
So they own 25% of a company that now they're talking about being a 300, 350, 400. Let's give them the highest range of the offering and say it's a $400 million company. Well, then that's their piece of that company is worth $100 million. So I don't know what they paid for it, but not $100 million. So that's one where it was seed angel funded and then raised some venture rounds. It went through some ups and downs. It bought a company that was the hardware company that you see every time you go to a restaurant that you've made a reservation with OpenTable, etc. And in the end, they're going to get to be a public company, and hopefully the venture investors and the founders and everybody makes some money and the company does well and then has the capacity to continue to grow and be a meaningfully large company. And then there's this company, SolarWinds, which was founded somewhere in the middle of the country, Oklahoma, I think, Tulsa, Oklahoma or something, where it basically was profitable from the very beginning. It's an enterprise software company. It does system management for medium-sized businesses. Howard thinks it's boring, but,
it's a great business.
Big business. It's been around for a dozen years. Company was making a lot of money, and a few years ago, they finally sold some shares to investors. My good friends at Bain Capital, I think, led that round as Austin Ventures put in some money. Others put in a little bit of money, and the companies continued to perform. And this year, I think they're predicted to do $100 million in revenue or more. More than $100 million in revenue. Last year, the company grew 50%. To, $80 million. Obviously, you shouldn't buy the stock based on what I say because I don't know any of the facts other than to say that SolarWinds is a very profitable software company. They're making tens of millions in profit on north of $100 million in revenue this year. And it's a perfect example of a company that should be public and 6 months ago couldn't be public. And the fact that it's going to get public now, I think, is really encouraging. And I hope there are others. I hope that this is the beginning of companies that deserve to be public companies getting public and having the ability to then have public company currency to grow their businesses in meaningful ways.
And you define deserve as they have strong growing revenue and good profit margins and a nice stable business.
That's right.
Sometimes companies go public and they're just a hope and a prayer.
Yeah, I just don't think the public markets are intended for speculation about future revenue streams or whatever. So I think if you have a strong business, it's a core business that's working, you don't have to necessarily be cash flow positive if there's a clear path to cash flow positive, but you're investing to grow your market, et cetera. But it has to be there has to be a working business there that you can understand and is predictable and meaningful. And if there isn't, you know, that's the problem we had in the late 90s, is that we had lots of great ideas and lots of promise, but predictability was not our strong suit. So I do think that, you know, the good news about this economic downturn from a technology standpoint is that we weren't the ones causing it. We didn't overextend ourselves on things that wouldn't necessarily make sense. And so as a result, you know, we're going to get to benefit from the companies that we've built that are real companies and strong companies that deserve to be on the public market. That's what I think, Howard.
On the David Hornick Show, I am very agreeable.
All right, next week we'll make it, or 2 weeks from now we'll make it the Howard Hartenbaum Show, and I'm happy to be your yes man. That's fine.
No, it's fine the way it is.
No, it's not. You're going to torment me. I don't think this is fine at all.
Okay. No, just that last week when we were talking about it, or 2 weeks ago, and I said, well, why don't we just change the name from VentureCast to the David Hornick Show, and you smiled like that was a good idea.
No, I didn't. You're right. Absolutely. It should be the David Hornick Show. It is my show. What are you doing here?
You asked me to be here. So another topic, I've noticed a little bit of, historically, a lot of venture firms do early stage investing are just betting on teams with ideas who are kind of maybe prototype or early prototype stage. But we've actually been taking a look at spinouts lately, and StumbleUpon is a good example of a company that you have invested in recently. And, you know, I thought that might be interesting to just talk about spinouts.
Yeah. If you have one that you want to spin out, you should email us. You have Hornick at augustgap.com, and what are you, Hartenbaum? What are you?
Howard.
How do I not know? I mean, it must just automatically come up. Howard at augustcap.com and Hornick at augustcap.com.
I think spinouts are an interesting thing because, you know, using StumbleUpon as an example, it's a very interesting company that eBay purchased and then a few years later decided it wasn't as core to their business as they thought it might be and decided to spin it back out. And in the meanwhile, the company had made some good progress and they needed some money for the spin out and brought in some investors to do it. And now we're sort of like we would have been a couple years ago if we just invested, except a couple more years have passed.
And good user growth and good, you know, market maturation and all that.
And in the time that we're in right now in the economy, there's a lot of companies that have acquired other companies or built kind of entrepreneurial companies within themselves, and they, due to some refocus and retrenching on their core business, it makes sense to look at spinning some of them out. And there are investors like ourselves who think that that's an interesting thing to do as well, providing that good people come along in the process. I mean, if a company called us and said, we want to spin this technology out, but you get no people with it, it's
there's
not,
nothing there. We've already said that's, you know, that's great. Nothing there.
But sometimes, you know, people want to be entrepreneurs. You can start something from scratch, but there's also an option to start something not from scratch because maybe there's some useful piece of technology or company or business that you're working with already.
Well, and you and I look at, you know, we look at stuff in the web space, and if you look at Yahoo, IAC, Fox, you know, even Google, depending on the circumstances, they've acquired interesting companies that may or may not have proven valuable to their core businesses or that, you know, to their broader strategy. And so, you know, I think there's plenty of opportunity to look at these things and say, oh, we see a business here. We can get back to focus on building it, particularly, as you say, if the core team is interested in continuing to grow the business. So, you know, we did this in the semiconductor space. We have a company called Magnum Semiconductor, which we spun a division out of another semiconductor company. So we're looking at it across a broad set of things. And it's great for, you know, one of the things is that it's great for the team because not only do they get to move on to building the business, it's easier for them to recruit talent. It's hard to recruit into these companies sometimes to run businesses that are captive. Everybody gets equity in the new thing, and you know, so you're back to having a stake in the game in a way that's more significant than if you were acquired by a bigger company, etc. So a lot of ways it's a big win for everyone. needless to say, that was the case with the Seagate deal, where we were part of the group that took Seagate private, and that was a spectacular success for everybody, and good for the business, and good, you know, and good for the market, and created interesting new technology. So I'm certainly a believer. I just hope we hear about more of them, because we think they're real opportunities, and we're certainly game.
What about international?
Well, apparently you're going to be in Germany, so if you got something going on...
Are you going to do your international deal? Where is it going to be?
My international deal. Well, I'm...
It's good to be diversified a little bit.
That's true. I through a set of circumstances, apparently have to fly to Peru. So maybe next one.
What are those set of circumstances?
Oh, okay. Yeah, it involves a child and illness and, you know... Being a devoted father, that's what it involves, Howard.
I lived in Japan for many years. I'm actually looking at going there with our other partner, John Johnston, in a few weeks to take a look and see what companies, what kind of technologies and mobile technologies and things are happening over there, because it's different than what's happening here, and we thought it might be interesting to take a look at that.
Yeah, so let us know if you have suggestions of interesting companies that we should check out or they should check out while they're out there. Or if you want us to catch up with you, feel free to email howard@augustcap.com. That's pretty awesome, but unfortunately, now my pocket's ringing. You'll miss the sumo tournament. It'll be over by then.
You know, I lived there for a long time, and I never really went down to the sumo.
You never went?
No.
Oh, my God.
I wasn't sure they'd let me in.
They'd let you in. You just have to buy a ticket. Yeah. Well, this has been a good show, and I just want to say to you, Howard, Twitter.